Welcome to It's a Good Life with Brian Buffini, founder of America's largest business coaching company. Here's a short classic cut from one of our all-time favorite episodes.
Top of the morning to you. Very special guest today. Oscar-winning actor. He's a storyteller, committed husband, father, man of faith, Mr. Matthew McConaughey. He's written this incredibly popular book called Green Lights. This was a kick in the pants. And we're delighted to have him on the show today. Matthew, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking some time for us.
Good morning, Brian. Good to be here, man. I'm into whatever's good for whatever ails you.
You know, I want to dive right in. Tell the folks what a green light is.
I mean, literally on the highway, it's a light that says, go on, proceed. It affirms our way. We love green lights because they do all those things and they do not slow us down or get in our way. Now, the things that do slow us down and get in our way are the yellow and red lights in life. They may be an intervention, a time of introspection, a pause we have to take, a tragedy, a crisis, a hardship, even a death. We don't ever want the red and yellow lights, but I've found that I believe we all find out that we needed them for some reason, or at least they had a green light lesson within their red and yellow hue. Mm-hmm. Somewhere down the line in life, in the rearview mirror, all yellows and reds, I believe, do eventually turn green or at least reveal a green light asset in our life. Now, we can engineer green lights by responsibilities we take today to create more freedom for our future, all the way down to the simplest things like put your coffee in your coffee filter the night before so when you get up in the morning and you're groggy, all you got to do is push the damn button. That's a green light. That's being cool and kind to your future self. Sometimes green lights fall in our lap. Good luck, good fortune. Hell, where'd that come from? I don't know the reason behind it, but I'm going to make some rhyme of it.
A lot of folks experienced yellow, red, and some green light. But at the end of the day, what you're talking about is whether it's yellow or red, to be looking for the green light. You know, timing, as you well know in your career, is everything. Yeah. I just feel the timing for this book and this message is perfect because of where people are at. And I think people would like to dream a little bit and aspire a little bit. There's kind of a relentless positivity in the book while also being very real and very, very candid about your life.
Well, thank you. Yeah, because I'm not into delusional optimism or foolish optimism. I'm not a Hallmark card. Hey, if you can dream it, you can do it. Rah, rah. I don't purchase that. And I don't believe it even to be true. But, you know, we are in a red and yellow light year. I think we can all admit that. And one of the things, one of the approaches, the tools that I bring up early in the book is when faced with the inevitable, get relative. Well, there enhances the tool for which to find or seek the green lights in a red or yellow light like this year.
What I've tried to do is, and I've just decided I'm going to increase my capacity, my physical capacity, my emotional capacity, spiritual capacity, so I can serve more people. I've had a lot of positives this last year. I'm going to take that, increase my capacity, serve more. You were stopped in your tracks by reading a book called The Greatest Salesman in the World by Og Mandino. I'd love you to share just what impact that book made on you.
I don't believe I found that book. I believe that book found me. Mm-hmm. It was the first piece of reading material that a teacher didn't tell me, you must read this. Mm-hmm. It was the first thing that a friend didn't come up and go, oh, you got to read this. I've done that book. It's a 10-month read, as you know. I've done it 2 times in full. And I realize it's so beautiful how Og structures it because it's a little of what I like to call conservative, early liberal late. Meaning early on, he just talks about habits and love and persistence, things that our mother taught us, you know, but it's just solidifying the habit. And then the second half of the book sets you into flight. Like now go out, scale it out, increase your capacity and take it into the world and see what response you get. It works.
On a deeper note, in your book, and this is very important, you detail both the affection and the dysfunction in your home growing up. You honor and also are aware of there was violence, you know, there was love. Your mom and dad were divorced twice and married 3 times. So many people seem to bring into their relationships the mistakes of what their parents did, even if they try to avoid it. Like a homing pigeon, we find ourselves repeating the mistakes of our parents. Yep. How have you avoided that?
It's a great question. And I've been asked that quite a few times and one that I've thought about. The one thing that was clear is when we had means of discipline, which were corporal punishment, or my mom and dad fought, which were bloody fights that I even got to witness and I count some of them in the book. Somehow I knew, even at 4 years old, that the love was never in question. I understood, I love you, I just don't like you right now. And so I did see early on and still do see that I want to instill in my children the same values that my mom and dad worked to instill in me, but I'm doing it a different way than they did. For instance, I got my first butt whoopings for lying, for saying I can't, and for saying I hate you to my brother. Mm-hmm. Now, whether you agree with getting the butt whooping or not, the reason I got in trouble was a damn good reason to get in trouble. Because look at the antonyms of those. Okay, tell the truth, believe that you're having trouble doing something, but don't believe you can't, and love, don't hate.
Mm-hmm.
That's three values. So they were instilling values right. for me to go become a autonomous young man who could hopefully negotiate the world with the right kind of character. Now, those are values that I want to instill in my children just as well. I wanted to go about it differently than my parents did, but mm-hmm. I sure do believe in what they were teaching.
So what I hear is you were able to eat the meat, throw away the bones. You've extended a level of grace. And in extending that level of grace, which is in short supply in our society today, you were able to see the good and move past and not repeat. If we grow as people, it seems like we can grow through and past and create a new deal, you know?
Yeah, and who am I the hell to judge them them on how they did it?
You know, it made an impression on you. Shortly after your dad passed, and I know he was a larger-than-life character, you carved a very meaningful phrase into a tree that says, less impressed, more involved. And it seemed to be a very poignant, significant moments in your life. What was the significance of less impressed, more involved?
Anybody out there who's lost a close loved one, and maybe even specifically a father, to a son, how it was for me. He's gone physically. All of a sudden it hits me, whoa, you don't have him to rely on to have your back if you get in the pinch. You don't have that father figure that you know is more powerful and influential than any government or law to be your crutch if you really get in a pinch, Matthew. So you sober up, you man up. All of a sudden I went, oh, all these things he's been instilling in me that maybe I've been doing about half-assed 75% of because I know he's got my back, I better man up and own these things and activate them in my life because he's not there. So when I say less impressed, more involved, I began to notice that there were mortal things in life that I had reverence for. People, mm-hmm. places, money, fame, that if I was encountered with them, maybe I'd be too much in awe, too impressed to actually be involved with them. Because I would be looking up to them. I also noticed that things in my life that I was condescending, sloughing off, oh, that's not worthy of me, ah, that's nothing, that I was looking down on and patronizing, those things that I was looking down on rose up to eye level. Those things that I was looking up at rose down to eye level. I remember writing, the world is flat. I see further, I see wider, and I see more clearly than ever before. My heart got higher. I probably got a quarter of an inch higher. I held my head up, and I walked forward with much more courage because I knew it was now on me. I didn't have my dad to have my back. It's sort of a baseline look to just say, hey, sober up, be less impressed with things, more involved, and you'll actually do those things better.
We have a lot of business owners that are listening in today, and you made two decisions from a career standpoint and what I look at from a strategic business standpoint. You said, I have five things on my proverbial desk to tend to daily. I had a family, I had a foundation, I have acting, I had a production company, and I had a music label. All of which carried your interest. You got money, you got resources, you've got wind at your back, and you find yourself in a very, very typical place that many of us do, over-opportunized, spreading yourself too thin, possibly getting overwhelmed. And you said, I eliminated two of my five commitments with plans to make A's in the other three. You were making B's in five,
yep.
And you pared down and prioritized and reprioritized to make A's in three. Now, that is the language of super achievers. How did you come to that conclusion, and what was that decision like? How hard was it to let go of those things?
Well, I'll tell you, the decision came very quickly and immediately. And actually, this was one of those decisions. It was very clear when it came. I'm sitting at home in my office one day. My phone rings. I go to reach for the phone. I notice the number is from my production company. The production company where I pay six employees. The production company where I'm paying the rent. Mm-hmm. And as I'm reaching for the phone, I see the number. As soon as I see it's from my office, my hand pauses. I remember looking at my hand going, what the hell is that? Pausing to pick up the phone from your own office. And I sat there and held my hand there and I let the phone ring until it quit ringing. As soon as it quit ringing, I grabbed the phone, called my lawyer and said, I want to close a production company. I want to close the music label. I've got five things and it's too many. And I've got these five little campfires going, but I don't have my three priorities, my foundation, family, and my acting career turning a full blaze. I need Valhalla mm-hmm. on those three instead of spreading the wealth here. And I shut it down that day. It was very clear to me. Now, obviously, I had a hunch that I felt like I was a little over-leveraged leading up to that. Mm-hmm. But I needed that. I remember that. My hand pausing on to pick up the phone. And I was like, that makes no sense. You created this in your life. You were paying out this. And you don't want to answer that call? Why create something to put on your desk that you don't look forward to dealing with on Monday morning? We all know that to succeed, we need to do good hard work. But is it the right kind of hard work? Because as a creative, I can find an angle to think anything works. To this day, I'm still clearing my desk of things. No, that's a one-off. Don't get into that.
Especially if you're a creative person, to create something new, it's the buzz, it's the excitement, it's the entrepreneurship, it gets the juices flowing. But it bifurcates the process of that grinding down and using the creativity internally to drill down. And that's why the second part to me, there was another bold decision. And again, this any business person listening to this is going to take a deep breath. You know, you were the king of the rom-com. You've become labeled as that guy. After you've trimmed down and you've gone to the, I'm going to do three instead of five, you decided you wanted to go in a different direction. You wanted to pursue different types of jobs. And like anyone who makes that decision, the phone stops ringing.
Yes, it did. So
you made this bold decision that led to this renaissance that you've coined the phrase reconnaissance. I mean, there was major chops in that. Talk to me about how you stopped the good,
yes,
had to suck it up to, yes, pursue the best.
Well, because I was so successful in the rom-coms and I was the go-to guy, I did notice that I would get the next rom-com script and read it and go, oh, that's good. And I think I could do that tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. And I remember going, well, that's cool. But man, I sure would like to read something that I go, whoa, I don't know what I'm going to do with this, but I can't wait to find out. Those dramatic roles and scripts that I was looking for, no one was even letting me sniff those. I mean, no matter, I could take a 400% pay cut and they were going like, we're not financing that with McConaughey, the rom-com guy, the shirtless guy on the beach in that role. It's not going to happen. So I said, all right, if I can't do what I want to do, what if I stop doing what I've been doing? Okay, big risk here. Shed many a tear on Camilla's shoulder because I was like, if I stop doing rom-coms, Hollywood's going to say, what the hell is he doing getting out of his lane? He owns this lane. Do you know how many people would take this lane if they could have it? And who the hell does he think he is? I talked to my money man. How did I save my money? You've done well because I don't know how long I'm going to go with that work is what I'm asking. I talked to my agent. I said, I need you to be the guard at the gate. Well, for the first 6 months of my sabbatical of saying, no, I'm not doing rom-coms, all I got sent was rom-coms. 14 months go by after that 6 months where nothing comes in. I call my agent every other day. What do you got? Buddy, no one is even mentioning your name. I bring up your name. They say, don't even want to talk about it. So now I'm going, I may have just taken a one-way ticket out of Hollywood. I may never work in Hollywood again. But I had a hunch. You know, when you go and you endure something and you're kind of taking a penance with each day, you kind of build a little bit more honor and strength. Fortunately, I had some things that kept my feet on the ground during that time, which was I had a newborn child that just greeted the world, Levi, which I remember telling myself, when you get bored or you get full of angst, put your time and effort and love in front of that child right there, and you cannot go wrong. We had a family crisis outside of my immediate family that I had to tend to. One of those kind of family crises that shows up that you just drop everything. No matter what you're doing, you go, I got to handle this. So I found some purpose in those two things. And right about then, once I'd forgotten about even going back to Hollywood, wasn't even thinking about it, well, guess what happened? Guess who was now a new novel, good idea for dramatic roles like Killer Joe, Mud. I found anonymity in the 20 months. I unbranded. And then when the fair came to me, the scripts came to me that I wanted to do, that dramatic fair, I attacked it with fangs and just ate it up because I knew what I wanted to do. But it was the unbranding.
It was the chops and the guts to do it. That is a hard thing to do. It's hard to say no to the good when you're pursuing the great. You did it. And what's come is a rebirth of your craft and probably one of the dynamics of what allowed you to even, I don't know if just the rom-com guy could have written this book.
I don't know if the rom-com guy would have had the identity and the self-confidence to say, I'm going to go sit with myself of the last 50 years. I'm going to go be in solitary confinement with myself and ride that bull.
You know, you're a big UT fan. You got yourselves a new coach down there, but you quote Coach Daryl Royal. Now, when you get your name on a stadium anywhere, you're a big deal. But when you're a coach of football and you get your name on a stadium in Texas, that's otherworldly.
Yes.
And there was a little story you told of a guy going through a tough time. And, you know, this guy positions himself in front of Coach Royal and he gives him words of advice. And it says, I've never had any trouble turning the page in the book of my life. Talk a little bit about turning the page. And you know, a lot of people need to turn the page right this minute.
You know, Coach Daryl Royal, that was one of his strengths, is that he could sum up, and he was a one-liner guy. Mm-hmm. That was his answer to that man, Larry, who was going through that tough time. You know, Larry had probably talked to him for 3 hours, monologue, and then Coach Royal just answered when he was asked, so what should I do? Coach Royal just goes, you know, Larry, I've never had any trouble turning the page in the book of my life. That really wasn't advice, was it? He didn't tell him what to do. He just made him look at his situation differently and going, oh, yeah, all you got to do is turn it. Mm-hmm. We are the author of our own book. And to be able to turn the page, you know, I write about the way to find the green lights is by persistence or pivot or either sometimes knowing when to wave the white flag. Mm-hmm. Well, turning the page is probably more leans to the pivot side. Going, you know what? I'm banging my head. I keep waking up with the same damn hangover. I keep waking up with the same problem. This choice I keep making in my life is not giving me residuals. It's not paying me back. I keep repeating it, trying to get a different outcome, which is the definition of insanity, right? Mm-hmm. And so maybe I need to back up and go, hang on a second. I got to reapproach this because I got to go about this a different way. I got to turn the page in how I'm looking at this, or I'm going to get rid of that in my life. It's an art because you don't want to turn the page too quickly on everything because that would mean we don't have enough persistence or endurance.
Or didn't learn the lesson, right?
Right. But sit there and go, when is it a time to turn the page? Do I keep reading the same lines over? Why am I having trouble getting to the bottom of this page and going back to the top over and over again? And asking ourselves, is it paying me back? Mm-hmm. No, the story has to evolve. The story must go on. And it's scary to turn the page because we don't know what's going to be on the next page. And we dwell in it and we, like I said, end up banging our head into something and going, I am a repeat offender. I have to turn the page and take the courage to say, I'm the author. I got a blank page on the next page. Let me continue writing, but let this story evolve.
Well, this book is a page turner, my friend. And it has giggles. It has profound truths. It has a journal. It has stories. It has travel. And we're going to encourage a lot of people to get it because it's a blessing. And I think it's very pertinent. And I thank you for writing it.
May the road rise up to meet you, and may the wind always be at your back. May the rain fall soft upon your fields, and the sun shine warm upon your face. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the hollow of his hand. See you next time.